Is there a word for sharing? And how about love? How do you measure? How do you get to know somebody from the outside vis-a-vis love? This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the emotional, the psychological, the physical, and just about everything in between. This is episode number 561 of The Next Step. We invite you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. Here, Father Voskin provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
How do you get to know someone? You ever thought about that? How do you know someone? Well, there are many ways, right? Obviously, you meet somebody. You spend some time with that person. You exchange ideas. You talk with that person. Communicate with that person. Now you get to know them, right? Communicate. Yeah, let's use that word. Rather than talk, of course, you could write to somebody and get to know them. Many, many ways. By actually establishing a relation. That's one way, right? We get to know people by reading about them. Learning about them, let's say it that way, because many, many different ways that we could learn about somebody. And obviously none of us know, say, a figure like Abraham Lincoln personally, but we know Abraham Lincoln as this wonderful president of the United States, 16th president. How do we know? We've read about him. We've seen a documentary. We've heard some people speak about them. And hearing, of course, using our senses, of course, we get to know people by interviews that they do. So we hear them, we see them, live people, of course. We get to know them by tuning into some kind of audiovisual presentation of that person. I bring this up because I'm just coming back from a funeral of a dear, dear friend. This is my deacon, Harayad Nalbanyan, who passed away just last week. And today I had I want to say it was a difficult, but it wasn't as difficult as you might think. The difficult responsibility of leading the prayer, leading the funeral service, the huarga vortun for this wonderful deacon. And we had, 5 clergymen there with condolences coming from throughout the world. The cathedral was packed with people. And I had to give the eulogy. He was my deacon. It was somebody that I had known for the past 20 years. 20 years we've served together. And yes, the same one that I spoke about last week. Yeah, it would be horrible if there was a couple of them, right? Yeah, no, the same one that I spoke about in last week's podcast. Well, the funeral was today, and I'm just coming back, and I'm sitting in front of the microphone asking you this question. How do you get to know somebody? Because people come up afterwards, and they say, oh, he spoke very nice. And, you know, it's easy. Of course, I know him. He was a very integral part of my life. It was somebody that here in the States, in Armenia, we worked together, we exchanged ideas. It's easy when you know somebody. Well, how do I know him? Well, we shared time together. We had conversations together. That's the question I'm asking. Because, on the other hand, what if you don't know the person? Can you say something nice about him? What are the ways that we get to know somebody? Well, like I said, you communicate. You engage in a conversation. You learn about that person, different ways of learning, engaging your senses by watching a film, by reading a book, by hearing an interview. You learn about the person. There is one other way that we seldom talk about, which is very important. And it's one that I have gotten used to, and I wanted to share that with you. I thought about that today because, of course, I knew him, but I didn't know him completely, right? Obviously, we all have different vantage points from which we look at that person. The life that I knew him, he was my deacon. We shared time in Armenia. We went to Sasnashen. I shared with you many stories throughout the years of many of the programs that we've done together. And obviously, he was much more than that. He had a life as a family man, right? He had a brother who had children. And they knew him as an uncle. So different vantage points. Everybody sees him from a different vantage point. You could think about this as if somebody's addressing an audience. Imagine a stage, and somebody is making a speech from that stage, and we are all part of that audience. Well, imagine a big theater. There are people who are sitting in the orchestra section, and they have to look up, perhaps even look up the nose of the guy who's speaking, right? That's a very unique vantage point. People in the balcony, they're seeing a group of people. They're seeing hundreds of people in front of them as he's looking on at this person speaking. People from the sides see a different angle. Now, the guy's saying the same thing, but we all have a different perception of the guy based on where we're sitting. Same thing about any of us in life, right? There are different ways that people perceive us. They get to know us. Now, the one way that people forget about, and this is one that I've picked up, and I feel like it's an art, and I'm inviting you to really open yourselves to this art, it's by seeing the reflection of love in the eyes and the hearts of people. What do I mean by this? Many times throughout my calling as a priest, last 36 years, going on 37, wow. 36 years, I've had to officiate at funerals. I've had to officiate at weddings, where you need to be able to be in touch with the people. You need to be able to talk to the people. Now, one way at a funeral is, of course, reading the biography, and you get to know a little bit about that person. But one of the skills that we all need to start developing is seeing the reflection of that person in the talks, in the tears, in the joy, in the smiles of people who talk about them. I've been at people's deathbeds with them in prayer. I've had the opportunity, and it's an honor. It really is. It's a very unique honor as a priest to be able to go into their lives in very crucial, critical moments. And during those times, I've learned more about those people than I could have in a conversation, because I didn't learn by talking with that person. Rather, I learned by observing. When you see little children crying for an uncle, when you see brothers and sisters huddled around that person, when you see parents, when you see children talking about their loved one, and in their expressions, in the tears, in their eyes, you could see that person, you get to know that person at a very different level. And it's because it's at the level of love. They are the expressions now of the love that that person had. It's pretty wild. I hope you're with me on this, right? Do you know what I'm talking about? We get to know people in different manners, different ways. You could learn to talk with them, which I advise, yes, please talk with them. You can learn about them by reading about them, or you can also learn about them even in their passing, even as they are gone, because you see what the reflection of them, of that person, is in the lives of others. So when somebody gets up, for instance, today, we were at a packed house at the cathedral. Afterwards, the tradition of a hokehatz, which is the memorial luncheon afterwards. Many people got up and spoke. And each person reflected, some with tears, about this noble man. And in those tears, we were able to understand and get to know this individual. Again, by hearing about them, it's much like a living documentary, so to speak. And it occurred to me that, you know, this is something that I've picked up through the years, having, because I, you know, as the priest, as the officiant who has to do these services, I need to be able to present the gospel message in a way that it is relevant to the lives of the people. And the only way that at that moment of their pain and their sorrow, that that relevancy gets to them is by looking at the lives the reason why we're there. You know, I've seen the other side of it too. And it's, I got to tell you, I'm very turned off by that. Somebody dies and you get somebody, whether it's a minister or a priest or somebody who's going to officiate at the service, and he gets up and he has no knowledge who the guy is, right? So he gets up and he talks about some esoteric idea about life is like this and death is like this, and now go home because this person has died. It's wrong. It's wrong. You have a captive audience. Why? Because we're hurting. We're vulnerable. At that point in death, with death, it hits you. It strikes you. You start contemplating your own mortality. Yesterday, in the West, now we in the Armenian Church, I've shared with you, we started Lent last Monday. Yesterday, Wednesday, is called Ash Wednesday. Ash Wednesday is exactly that day. And I think it's wonderful, because what they do is they place ashes on their forehead. And they said, remember, you came from dust and you returned to dust. It is an opportunity. By placing those ashes on your head, it's an opportunity for you to realize, for you to come to terms with your own mortality, your own finitude. In other words, you're a finite being. You're not infinite. You don't go on forever. Ash Wednesday, honestly, it's a beautiful tradition. It's like a wake-up call in the middle of life, just telling you, hey, get with the program, folks. You came from dust, and you will return to dust. Now, what are you going to do with what is the purpose of your life? And that's the whole contemplative process, that self-examination that we have during the Lenten season. Now, of course, I'm talking about Ash Wednesday as being this means of us understanding why Ash Wednesday. This is not a talk about Ash Wednesday. It's understanding that life is more than that material wealth that we have all around us. And you may think that it's obvious, but it's not. You look at the world right now, particularly in the Western countries, particularly in the United States. I mean, the economics came out this morning, just this morning. Economically, our exports were far higher. No, excuse me, our exports were lower, far lower than our imports. Well, it sounds horrible, right? It seems like there's this trade deficit, there's problems, right? You basically want to have a situation where you're importing and exporting at a reasonably similar level, right? But when your exports are lower than your imports, in other words, there are more things, more products coming into the United States here than are leaving the United States, it's telling you it's off. And then we heard another commentator and says, well, it's not as bad as you think, because what it means is that we have more means. We have more ability. We have a stronger dollar. It means that our goodness, our ability to do business and that money and that economics is so good now that we are able to buy more things from the outside. And the people outside are less fortunate and do not have the ability to buy the things that we produce. So it's interesting. I'm listening to this and I'm saying, wow, you know, yeah, isn't that true? We are just consumed with the normal trade, the normal flow of economics. And it's that economics. I've shared with you this small little poem that I've written many, many years ago. And in there, there's that line, you know, it's economics that buys you that Bible. And our religion comes to you courtesy of economics. Why do we have Bibles in our homes? You're going to get upset about this. I know I'm going to hear it from some people. We have Bibles in our homes, in our lives, to the extent that we do, because there's a prophet in it. Yes, hate to admit it. Leather-bound Bibles with beautiful gold script on the outside. They're a beautiful gift. They're a beautiful gift. I did a baptism last Saturday. Little one-year-old baby. There was a beautiful, beautiful Bible there. Oh, beautiful. With the gold, the gold pages. And Jesus' words in red letters. Big old thick Bible. And I thought to myself, you really think this little kid's going to ever read this? No, it's going to just be on a shelf someplace. And maybe, if we're lucky, at some point she'll grow up and she'll look at it and say, oh, that was given to me on my baptism day. It's about the extent of it. And so, yes, the economics is what moves us and drives us. And we have the religion because of the economics. It's all connected. I got to dig up that poem. It's more than just this one little phrase. But I wanted to make the point because we're talking about how do you get to know somebody. And we get to know people by different means. And what I'm suggesting to you is that we need to be more attentive to the expressions that people have about their loved ones. And in so doing, we get to learn about that person. We get to know that person in the reflection of the love of others toward them. And this was particularly true today at the funeral, where many people expressed themselves during the luncheon. Many people. They talked about this individual, this Hadid, in different ways that not all of us knew. There was a group of people that didn't know about his church life, which I was happy to share with. There were others that didn't know about his political life. There was others that didn't know about his youth, didn't know about his family life. And we all got to see different perspectives. The individual on the stage, we saw the different perspectives. And I get to look at him through the love that people had. And most especially, there were two gentlemen. I was very moved by this because in Armenia, I have a few heroes in my life. One of those heroes was there today. And when I saw him, he lives in Armenia. Him and his friend, they were there today. They came and they gave me big hugs at the gravesite. And I said, oh, isn't this great that you're here today? I'm assuming in my head that maybe they're visiting and it happened that this funeral is taking place while they're visiting. No. They flew over from Armenia, 12 time zones, to be here for the funeral today and are leaving in 2 days. Just enough time to catch their breath and then going back. What does that tell you about this individual? What does that tell you about Hadid? What does that tell you about the life that he led? Do you get to know somebody by the love that people have towards him, the respect that people have towards him? And that's what I'm sharing with you. Take some time during this Lenten season to really use all of your senses, not just your eyes, your ears, your taste, your feel, but use the sense of love, of expression. See why people are talking. See why people are sharing. See why people are giving of themselves, and you will see the love that people have given is the love that is being returned to them. And you know what? There's so many ways of saying this. You know, Jesus says in Acts, he says, yes, Acts. I know what I'm talking about. It's a Jesus quote. It's in Acts. If I'm not mistaken, I think there's two quotes that Jesus has in Acts, one of which is, it is better to give than it is to receive. Well, that's one way of saying it. We remember the line that says, and in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. Beatles, yes. 50-year-old line. 50-year-old. Not as old as the Jesus line, but 50 years. In the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. Now, push yourself. The theory of thermodynamics. Equilibrium, right? To every action, there is an opposite. And equal reaction. You give your love. You give of that love. And it comes back to you. And you see that that love floats around in rooms like the room that I was in. At a funeral, you see that love floating around among the people. People who are vulnerable, people who are open and really kind of like really awake at a funeral. Because when a funeral happens, you realize it's a slap in your face that you're not living forever. Your friend is gone, and one day you're going to be gone too. Better get your act together. Let's take a break right now, okay? I'm going to come back. We're going to continue. I'm going to share with you. I'll give you a hint. I'm going to share with you some ideas. Share with you. Let's take a break. We always do a song of the day. Here's the one I picked out for today.
Mavazinha pinzam vazanker enarazin menk matta mut banderun tanj vazanker sultan jankit menk matta hurra 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 kajne shtehi sura shok shoka hurra 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 kajne shtehi Sara Bacheta, Kezaxores, Irashar and Shateru, Mesmotiekar, Paroyekar, Doritianer, Mesperi, Hurra, Hurra, Hurra. Każdy żyje sura szokszoka, hurra, hurra, hurra. Każdy żyje sura szokszoka. Shoga kach nashde, hurra hurra, shlu goratzir, kursket kachov zartarezir, hurra hurra hurra, kach nashde hisura shoga, hurra hurra hurra, kach nashde hisura shoga.
Karekin Nijde is the name of that song. It is performed by the one, the only, Hovhannes Badalyan. Yes, definitely old school, and I'm making no apologies for it. Definitely old school. You know, when you get down to it, there are few people that have this voice. Hovhannes Badalyan did. I had the good fortune of meeting him back in the 1980s. He had made a trip to the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and I was serving as priest up there in San Jose. And we had a chance to meet with him and share some thoughts. And actually, I had a private performance with him. Hovhannes Badalyan, he was a giant. He was a giant. Yeah, you can't get any finer. Anyway, this is off an album of Armenian patriotic songs. I'll try to find a link and put it on today's show notes, but anything he sings speaks to my heart. And I wanted a song particularly. Karekin Nijde was somebody that I remember today in my eulogy, because when you go to Yerevan, there is a statue dedicated to him. I believe 2016, it might have been a little bit earlier, 2015, 2014, somewhere around there. It was dedicated in Yerevan. It's maybe about a block, two blocks away from the central square of Yerevan, dedicated to Karekin Nijde. And on there, there is an inscription that says, God, nation, and country, or fatherland. Ostvaz Ask Hayrenik. And underneath it, a beautiful statement that he has made is quoted of. And of course, all this is in Armenian, but it says that live only for those things that are worth dying for, and die only for those things for which you lived. And it was a quote that I used today, and his spirit was very much alive in the spirit of the deacon that we lost. And anyway, a small little unapologetically given tribute through this song, Karekin Nijde, performed by Hovhannes Badalyan. Kind of raw today, coming after a funeral, raw with emotions, but I think you guys like it best that way. At least that's what you've been telling me. Unfortunately, tragically, we've been doing too many of these raw kind of podcasts lately, but it gives us an opportunity to really touch into some very special spaces, you know, spaces that go unexplored. And I think during Lent, isn't it a great time to be doing these kind of experiments with our feelings, with our emotions, as we are looking inward? I got to tell you, so many of you have been writing to me about the Lenten series podcast, about the Lenten journeys, and I'm glad you're making use of them. I'm glad they're back up and you're making use of them. There'll be a link on today's show notes, but apparently it's the number one series that you're listening to, number two and three. I don't know. I actually haven't received any comments about two and three this year, but number one, the one that was the original Lenten journey, seems to be getting the most hits. But today we're talking about some of the more fundamental questions. You know, we had to express ourselves. We had to say goodbye to somebody. You have to say goodbye to another human life, somebody you've shared life with. It gets to you. It's not an easy thing to do. And, you know, the closer you are in a relationship, the more difficult it is. But here's something that has always troubled me. And I know that through the years, I've even shared this with you. But today, it came out perfectly. In other words, I got a validation to my theory. Words say a lot about any society. And this has been proved from Margaret Mead, and the proverbial one is the word white among Eskimos. Eskimos have something like 50 different words to describe white, or to say white. How do you describe? Well, obviously, everything around them in the snow is white, and so you have different words which connotate different things. We as Armenians have a bunch of different words that express death. Why? Because, yeah, death has been there. It's been in our lives. We have Mernil, Mahanal, Vakhchanil, Sadgil. We have all kinds of words. And each of them means a unique thing. Somebody of prominence, Vakhchanils. Somebody, a king, a clergyman, Vakhchanils. A person, Mernil or Mahanal, you know, is used for a person who dies. An animal is said to have Sadgil. That's the word that's used. So in other words, there's different words to express death. And I imagine because death was a very prominent feature of Armenian society through the centuries, having been under persecution, having lived under tyranny, under different regimes, and so on. Well, here's an interesting word, and I've thought about this throughout the years. Share. The word share. How do you say that in Armenian? Now, I'm not talking about describing it. There are many ways of describing. You could describe what share is. Basically, what is mine is yours. What is yours is mine. We are sharing it. But how about a word? A word that literally says share. And I found it difficult to find that word. If you Google translate the word share, you get gisvil. But even gisvil is not fully accurate. It means to split, really. That's the word to split. It's a little bit different from share because share means that there's a willingness. Like gisvil, I can split something. A court can gisvil. It doesn't mean that we are sharing it, right? There's a dispute between me and somebody else. The court comes in and says, you will now split it. You will gisvil it. Well, it's different than sharing. I couldn't turn around and say, okay, now I am sharing that. No, I'm not really sharing it. Sharing means that you have an active involvement in wanting to gisvil, to split it. Now, on the Nairi dictionary, which is another one of the big prominent online dictionaries, it says mas, pajin. Mas is a portion. Pajin is, again, a portion. They give a few different words, but still doesn't hit that word share. Furthermore, share doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to split something. I could share my car with somebody, for instance. Doesn't mean that that person has equal access to it. It's not a gisvil. It's not right down the middle. But it does mean that I have a willingness to give it. So this word share has always bothered me. Like, can we find, is there a word in Armenian that really actually means that word share? And it would say a little bit, as I said earlier, right, the idea of white, of death, it tells you a little bit about the society. Does this tell us something about Armenian society? Was there sharing? Is sharing part of the natural process? So today, in one of the speeches that a gentleman made, he got up and he started expounding about the virtues of this deacon who had passed away and saying that as Christians, Yes, he's now talking about the Christian message. And he brought it down to three basic items. And by the way, everything today was, let me say, 99% of everything we did was in Armenian, with the exception of a couple words that were said here and there in English, but all Armenian. And this man, too, he was talking all in Armenian, and he said, as Christians, there are three things that are important, that identify us as Christian, and he attributed them all to this man who had passed away. He says, first of all, you love. Christians need to love. Sirel. He said it in Armenian. To love. We have to love one another. This is what makes us Christian. Second, we need to forgive. Nerel. He said it in Armenian. So as he's saying, Yerek Vaner, he's saying, Ser, Nerel. And when he came to share, the third one, he goes, Yev, share. So, ding, ding, ding. It just hit me that in this beautiful Armenian that was being spread out all afternoon, that we've heard different speeches and everything, this one word comes up in English, share. He said it all in Armenian. Christians love, they forgive, and they share. Share came out in English. And it made me think, do we have a word? Do we have, or is it maybe a time for us to make a word? I'd love to hear from you. What does share mean to you? What is share? What does it mean to share with somebody? To give something that is yours to another person? Does that mean you have an expectation to get something from that person back to you? That to me would be splitting. That would be splitting. It means that there's an equal proportion. It means that even if it's not an equal proportion, it means that there's some definite boundaries. Whereas sharing, it's kind of obscure, right? I share my ride. I share ride. I share my car. I share my money. I share my lunch. I share my love. You see what I'm saying is if we could find, is there a word like this? It tells you a little bit about the society. Because then you start understanding. You start dissecting. You start analyzing. And you start seeing that, you know, maybe if these words don't exist, there's a reason for it. And in finding those reasons, you start creating opportunities where you can openly talk about it. And it's, you know, it really comes down to some major, like, communal psychosis that there is. Is that okay to say? I guess so. We said it. Anyway, think about it. It's just one of those things that just hit me. I mean, especially today when you're already vulnerable, you're opening yourself up and you're hearing all of this. And then, boom, it hits you that this one word, all afternoon, one word is said in English, share. You go, okay. You're not the only one who is stumped by this problem. We talked about love. We talked about share. I want to talk a little bit about the third ingredient of Christianity, forgiveness. Ingredients, I'm just quoting this man who got up and spoke, right? But it fits because something just crossed my desk a couple days ago and I shared it with our prayer group and I need to share it with you because it was just so beautiful. It comes to us from Pope Francis and he talks about the third of those Christian virtues, okay, love, sharing, and forgiveness. And I need to share this with you because, yes, I'm going to share it with you. I'm going to share this with you because I think that it is so necessary in this world today. And especially we are at the beginning of the Lenten season as we are preparing ourselves to get through the next 40 days, as we're preparing ourselves for the great Easter celebration. We don't talk enough about forgiveness. Yes, in his shoes were based on that whole idea of forgiveness of 7 times 77. But it behooves us to talk more and more about it, to really emphasize it, because in the world today, this is something that there's just not enough of, not enough understanding. Now, Pope Francis is talking about the family and family life, but I think you can apply this just clear across the board. Let me read it to you and then we'll look at it. This is Pope Francis talking about forgiveness. He says, forgiveness is vital to our emotional health and spiritual survival. Okay, two things. What is it vital for? Emotional health. Physical health, we understand. What is emotional health? Well, it's exactly what you think it is. It's being able to put your head on the pillow at night, right? Emotional health. Spiritual survival. Wow. Without forgiveness, he continues, the family becomes an arena of conflict and a fortress of evil. Without forgiveness. Take forgiveness out. The family becomes an arena of conflict and a fortress of evil. I mean, these words are just so fitting, especially for the world climate right now, the situation, the bigger family, the family called humanity. Think about it. Do we have tolerance for one another? Are we able to talk with one another? Is there forgiveness? No, there isn't. And as a consequence, what do we have? We have conflict and we have this fortress of evil. Without forgiveness, the family becomes sick. Forgiveness is the aspesis of the soul. Aspesis means the absence of bacteria. Okay, of viruses, of other organisms. Without forgiveness, the abscesses of the soul, the purification of the spirit, and the liberation of the heart. Wow. Forgiveness is the aspesis of the soul, the absence of bacteria to clean it out, the purification of the spirit, the liberation of the heart. He who does not forgive does not have peace in his soul or communion with God. Evil is a poison that intoxicates and kills. Keeping heartache in your heart is self-destructive gesture. It's autophagy. Autophagy. It means the consumption of the body's own tissues, okay? In the metabolic process, you know, when people starve, okay, the body starts consuming its own self, okay? It's autophagy, self-destructive, keeping those heartaches in your heart. Those who do not forgive are physically, emotionally, and spiritually ill. For this reason, the family must be a place of life and not a place of death, a place of paradise and not a place of hell, a healing territory and not a disease, an internship of forgiveness and not guilt. Forgiveness brings joy where sorrow has brought sadness, of the healing where sorrow has caused the disease. Pope Francis. I don't know. I started to do it. You could dissect this. I'll put it up on the show notes. You could dissect it. You could talk about it. But think about it in terms of what the world needs now. Love, sweet love. Yes, the world needs now forgiveness. There's just not enough of it. We are just like blaming everybody and his uncle and his mother for everything that's going on. People are looking for little things. In Armenian, there's an expression, looking for the hair inside the egg. We're looking for something wrong with everything. Rather than allowing a flow of life to go forward, this prevents us from moving forward. Those who do not forgive are physically, emotionally, and spiritually ill, says the pontiff. Now, I offer this today because we're at the beginning of the Lenten season, and if you were in church, you heard the lectionary reading for last Sunday. It came to us from Matthew chapter 6. In there, Jesus, as part of the Sermon on the Mount, talks about three things, which become the three elements. No, it's not about sharing. It's not about love. It's not about forgiveness. Don't confuse too many things. I have to say that because now that we're talking in threes. But Jesus talks about three things which become the cornerstone for the Lenten season. You see, a lot of times what happens is people during Lent start thinking about what we shouldn't do. I shouldn't eat meat. I shouldn't eat dairy. I shouldn't eat chocolates. I shouldn't need to do this or that and everything. That's fine. I shouldn't gossip. Yeah, you know, don't do those things. You shouldn't gossip. But how about the things that you should do? And that's what Jesus talks about in Matthew chapter 6. He talks about the things that we need to do. In other words, Lent is a period of time to do, not to restrain. And what are those things that he talks about? Three things. He talks about charity. When you do your works of charity, do not let your right hand know what the left hand is doing. In other words, do it in silence. Do it because it's right. Don't worry about where it's going, how people are going to perceive it. Don't wait for the applause. Do it because you know it's right. That's the first ingredient. Your charity. Do the charity. Do the good works. Do the acts of love. Take your time to do it. That's the Lenten period. You want something to do during Lent? Give to others. And you know what? This giving doesn't mean writing out a check. It doesn't mean going out there and pouring out your wallet. Yeah, you should. You can. But it also means the things that you can do that are so more valuable, more valuable. Finding somebody who needs a visit. Finding somebody who just needs a phone call. Picking up the phone and taking an extra 10 minutes out of your week to make a phone call to a friend, to somebody who you've forgotten or they've forgotten you, and reestablish a relationship. That's something you can do, right? Call somebody over for dinner. It's something you can do. You're going to eat anyway. An extra place setting. Somebody who needs a friend. Reading to somebody. Teaching somebody. So many things we can do. Giving to people. So Jesus talks about Christian charity. Second, he talks about prayer. And in prayer, he talks about do not add extra words like the heathen. God already knows your needs. But when you pray, pray like this. Our Father who art in heaven, may your name be holy. May your kingdom come. May your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And we add, for thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. The Lord's Prayer. Now, what you fail to understand about the Lord's Prayer is that this is the only time Jesus gives a prayer, and he's given all this information about our Father, about daily bread and everything, but he adds an addendum. The next line in Matthew, go ahead and read it. The next line in Matthew focuses in on only one specific part of the prayer. He continues by saying, if you don't forgive those people who have trespassed against you, neither will God forgive you the trespasses that you've committed. In other words, it's so essential, that one little line, forgive our trespasses as we forgive those who have trespassed against us. So essential that we forgive. That Jesus even, it's like almost like, you know, he's putting a stamp on it. And he's saying, okay, this is the Lord's Prayer. And by the way, let me get my highlighter out. I'm going to highlight it in yellow. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to double it over and highlight it with red. Make sure you see and know what I'm talking about. Forgive others. And the third thing he talks about, of course, is fasting, which becomes one of the easier subjects of Lent. And perhaps that's the reason why people do that, right? People want to talk about fasting. It's so easy compared to the others. Yeah. Yeah, now, you see how Lent works out? It's usually talked about as a place, as a time where you're fasting, and now you're understanding. This is what I was saying earlier about understanding the words, the power of words. You're understanding why people talk about fasting so often. Why? Because it's the easiest one. Of the three, it's the easiest. It means you're not going to take in certain food products. Okay. Well, how about the others? Can you love? Can you forgive? Can you give? There's the challenge. And I bring this all up at the beginning of Lent, and that's why I wanted to talk about this Pope Francis quote. And I'm going to share it with you, and I ask you to do it as a meditation. Now, there's a little something that we've been talking about with our prayer group, with our Bible study group specifically, and I want to share it with you. And that's, during Lent, people are always asking me for some solid ways that they can practice. I want to just share with you one little idea, and that's about prayer. Taking some time to pray. And I think what happens often is people get scared and intimidated. Like, what can I pray? I know they are, Father, what can I pray? How about just a basic conversation? And here's the other part that we're scared of. We're scared about time. How can I do that? takes time to do it. No, what I'm going to ask you is do a 5-minute prayer during Lent. And remember, the whole idea of Lent is so that we develop the practices for the rest of our lives. So take 5 minutes a day. Can you do that? I mean, you take 2 minutes to brush your teeth. You should, right? Dentist tells you should do 2 minutes to brush your teeth. Get in those back corners and everything, in between the teeth, you know, where there's kinds of food lodging and everything. And the Pepsin. That's why they had Pepsodent. Did you know that? One of the original toothpaste, American toothpaste, was called Pepsodent. It had pepsin in it because pepsin would naturally, it would naturally break down food that was in between the teeth. Now that you're all grossed out by what I'm talking about, let's get back to the program here. We take 2 minutes to brush our teeth. We take certain time to get dressed, to take care of our looks, our grooming. Now we're talking about, remember how Pope Francis talked about, forgiveness is vital to our emotional health and our spiritual survival. I'm going to ask you for those 5 minutes every day to look after your emotional survival, your emotional health, your spiritual health. And let me tell you what I mean by that. Pray. Get away, just as Jesus says. Lock yourself up someplace where you can't be distracted. Now, here's the problem. When we pray, our mind goes into 20 different directions. So you start praying. Within a few seconds of your prayer, your mind starts thinking about different things. So this is why I was saying, it's not as easy as you think, that prayer. It's not as easy as you think. And you know what I'm talking about. You can't focus for that long. You can't focus for 5 minutes. It's very, very difficult. And, you know, I remember as in college, in comparative religions, we went to a Buddhist temple. And during the when we were sitting in Zazen, there was a Buddhist master who would go around with a stick because many of the students would doze off and he'd like whack you right on the right on the shoulder blade to wake you up. And that's also a problem during prayer. So that whole idea of prayer for 5 minutes, that's the experiment I want you to do this Lenten season. Give yourself quality, good 5 minutes of prayer daily. Try that. It's a Lenten experiment. So, talked about love, talked about sharing, about forgiveness, and, well, about getting it all together during this Lenten season. And now that the piano player has come into the studio, let's take a little break to hear Susie make her announcement. I'll be back in a couple moments, okay?
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Okay, thank you, Susie. And thank you, our listeners, for all the support, the prayers, and all the good things you have come in my way. Like I said earlier, I've been getting a lot of nice, positive comments about the Lenten series, Lenten Journey. Do follow those. We'll put a link on today's show notes once again. And if you've started late on Lent, that's okay. You could binge. Each one is about 5 minutes, so you may be looking at about a half an hour of time to catch up with where you should be. Well, by the time you get this podcast, we'll be on the 5th day of Lent, perhaps the 6th for those of you who listen in on the weekend. But it's really a good series, if I do say so myself, okay? The Lenten journey. Let's see, this next few weeks, I'm going to be at St. James in Los Angeles, then I'm going to be out in Scottsdale, Arizona, and we're looking forward to seeing you wherever we happen to be. Hey, listen, look us up on the net. We're on all the socials, and of course at the mothership, inissues.org, and you can always email me, which happens to be, by the way, the best way to get in touch. Email, yes. What did we say earlier? It's called old school, yes. Can you imagine there's a day now that we're calling email old school? Yes, but I still adhere to it. The address is feedback@epostle.net. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. It's been a long day. It's been an emotional day. We're going to call it quits and leave for our 5 minutes of prayer, our 5 minutes of reflection, kind of put the thoughts together of a very, very busy day. I want to thank you for your prayers and for being with us today. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, and Ken, our technical director, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath. Cut out!